Today is Thursday. It is April 6, 2017. It's 10 minutes after 11 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record here in the studios of WGN Radio, portions of which can be heard on my Saturday morning show at 11 a.m.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the angsty columnist from the Tribune, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in the paper.
Is angsty a word?
It is.
I was reminded that gotten is a word, and I said to my wife or somebody, I said, gotten? Is a word, and they go
gotten.
Trump used that in a tweet when he said something about the New York Times gotten me wrong all the time,
and that has sounds gotten.
Well, you need a helping verb.
Well,
he's
limited by so many
it's
characters.
Twitter.
But gotten is at least a word, right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure about that sort of thing. Speaking of education, talk to me, Eric, about what you think about some of Rahm Emanuel's innovative ideas for high school graduates in Chicago.
Well, he's got this one innovative idea, right, which is he wants to have in hand for every student who graduates some sort of a plan for the next year. Now, I think it's a really great idea to have...
Oh,
angsty,
Eric.
Angsty boy.
I'm going to take my hammer, kill your phone.
You know, that's a really pathetic ringtone, Eric.
I know.
It's not a ringtone.
It's very zen.
It's my alarm. I set an alarm to remind me to come up here and talk to you guys.
Whatever that is, that was very zen.
So let's go back. Let's just go back and let's edit that out because that's just dumb.
We won't be editing that out.
No,
so
that's my favorite part.
You have to have a letter of some sort of certification that you're going on to high school.
You've got to have
high school, college, junior college, and military. You're going to serve in the military or you're going to go to a trade school.
Or a year-off plan. You just have to have a plan for the following year. It's a great idea to have a plan, I think. I think it's a wonderful thing to keep college or high school seniors with their eyes on the future and to remind them that a high school diploma is not the be-all and end-all for most people. You've really got to go on beyond that. A lot of your future depends on that. I don't think as a graduation requirement, it's a good idea. I can imagine all the bookkeeping hassles. I can see the story of the kid who got straight A's who just didn't get it together to get a letter who doesn't get to then walk through graduation with his class. It just seems like it's too much daddy state, you know? It's like,
whoa. It's unusual for Eric to rip on the daddy state.
Kind of
you love the daddy,
daddy yeah.
state.
So, I like the nanny state. The daddy state, I don't.
What is the requirement? Because I thought I heard the mayor say an acceptance letter.
Yeah,
right.
You don't have to
be accepted, do you? Or,
yes, you do.
What's an acceptance
I thought
letter?
It was like a two-year plan, which means to me it could just be, but right, like you have to show you're enrolling in community college or...
Yeah, I mean, an acceptance letter would mean you would have to have been accepted at one of these places you applied to.
And sometimes that takes a while, your senior year. But what's your point?
Well, the one thing that he does say in his defense is that you automatically, if you're a graduate of a Chicago public high school, you're automatically accepted into the Chicago
if you have
community
a B
college
average,
network.
Yeah.
I think any graduate is automatically accepted. I think the B average has to do with a scholarship or something.
Yeah, they'll pay for it if your grades are good enough.
So what do you guys think CPS's graduation rate is?
Well, he wants it to get to 86%. It's been in the 50s. I'm going to guess it's 60%. 60.
I'm going to go 61. I just want to be.
It's about 65%.
Yes!
And that's if you trust their numbers.
It's better than it used to be.
Because they've gotten caught when kids dropped out, they referred to them as transfers. And actually, WBEZ caught them on that a couple of years ago. So those are if you trust CPS's numbers. So while I appreciate the mayor trying to get kids to look to the future, how about we graduate kids at a higher rate before we start adding more requirements on them? I mean, some of these, and that's district-wide. Those are schools holding up the numbers in Eric's neighborhood. You go down to Robeson and Englewood, and the graduation rate is more like 22%.
Really? It's that low?
Yes, it's extremely low. And you have kids who are dealing with foster home situations, parents who are drug abusers, pregnancy rates, like 1 in 4 girls in some of these schools and boys are parents by the time they become seniors. So it just seems, again, like a little tone deaf for the mayor to be going down this mandatory.
Your papers are not in order. You cannot graduate. I see this problem. Can you imagine a situation where a kid is working as hard as he can just to graduate and they go and then he hasn't or she hasn't done these extra steps to get this letter to give it to the right people?
It's a homework assignment. You write out a plan. You show that you applied somewhere, and it just gets your mind thinking to the future.
You guys really are lowering the expectations for these kids. That's a handicap in itself, right? I mean, shouldn't we ask them to do what is best for them instead of saying, oh, you've got too much on your plate, you can't better yourself?
I'm not saying they can't better themselves. I'm saying to put this extra paperwork requirement on them.
Look, don't they have to pay it? They have to pass a constitution test, and we're learning now half the people in Washington couldn't pass that test. So maybe their time is better spent trying to find a community college.
Speaking of Washington,
what
was that? See,
she's a
radio. It's rubbing off.
A profession right here.
What do you make of the representative Nunes announcing that he is going to step down from the investigation?
Well, one of the guys taking his place is Trey Gowdy.
Well, that'll muddy things up just a little bit.
Trey Gowdy of the Benghazi hearings. So I don't know. I think it's got to be a step forward, right? Because the guy had to go.
He did have to go.
I don't know if they'll regain credibility.
He said he didn't
not.
Want to be a distraction any longer. Although when asked that previously, would you step down? He said, why would I? But a week later, he realizes that he would because he's just
realized.
In the way.
I wonder who realized it for him. I'm guessing Speaker Ryan had something to do with this. They probably came to him and said, look. Nunes, or however you say your last name.
Nunes. I think it's Nunes.
It is Nunes. Mm-hmm. We went over that. But it's time to go.
Yeah.
I think what happened with Bannon also. It's time to get off the security.
Do you think that's a big go or just a little go for Bannon?
It's a public humiliation, right? He's kicked off the security council.
Well, I don't know. He went there to do a task, and clearly the task was completed. Right.
Well, isn't now
that, was there justification?
He went there to babysit Flynn, right?
To de-something-ize, you're right, with Flynn there?
De-operationalize the way
Well, do you have a lot of hope for the House investigation into this anyway? I mean, the FBI is looking into it. The Senate is going to look into it. So, whatever. I mean, Nunes is out of the way, but that thing seems to be such a cluster to me. I wonder if it would ever bear much fruit anyway.
The Senate investigation looks like it's fairly serious.
That's the kind of one besides, what is to you would be the most extraordinary revelation from one of these investigations? What is the smoking gun?
I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know that there is a smoking gun. I would like to see Susan Rice have to answer further questions. I don't think she was truthful at all in her interviews with MSNBC. They didn't ask her the right questions. She didn't answer the question. She kept going off on a tangent of this or that. Do I think she did something illegal? No, I don't. But there is enough story and truth out there, if you read Eli Lake's piece in Bloomberg, that she was asking to unmask people at a greater pace during the transition, and that the Obama administration wanted to kind of keep some of that information and lower the standard of how it could be released so that if there was something there, it could go out. And the question with all that is, we trust our government to surveil us. But there is supposed to be a really high standard of when you can unmask. And I think this brings into question what that standard is. What do you think the offense is?
Here's my scenario. Doubtful that it's true, but here's mine. So they are surveilling these people, the Russians, and they find out that the Russians are talking to people. They have the conversation, right? They just don't have the identity of who they're talking to. Perhaps there's evidence there that there was some sort of collusion, some sort of quid pro quo with the Russians in these conversations of these Americans. Well, if that's the case, wouldn't it be derelict not to ask that these names be unmasked?
She had to go through some steps, right? To unmask, you have to go through some steps.
Who's this fella? You can't just do that.
For your own curiosity. And they're not like listening in on Trump administration people's conversations with their bookies or their mistresses. These are conversations with people who are under surveillance for security purposes.
Foreigners,
so, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're getting these names, and because there's a lot of smoke even at the time about Russian involvement in our election, Rice is seeing these things, and she's asking that they be unmasked, which seems like, yeah, I'd like to know what she was seeing that justified her unmasking them, but I don't think it was. I don't think we can assume it was gratuitous or that it was just politically motivated.
I mean, it wasn't leaked, right? It didn't get out.
Well, she says it wasn't leaked, but it did get out.
Flynn got out.
But the idea that Susan Rice was the unmasker in the Bloomberg story. Did you guys read Eli Lake's story that started all this? Well, go read it. He talks about how she may not have thought she leaked, but if she was talking to colleagues and the White House counsel knew about it, then she probably was the source of the leaks in an indirect way. But she wasn't asked
that. Okay, but again,
that.
Even that scenario, she's doing something within her office and not incorrect. I mean,
well, the question is whether or not you're supposed to unmask if there is a security threat. If this is some sort of cyber terrorist issue, that is supposed to be the reason why you are allowed to ask those questions, according to these reports.
And getting to what Eric said, if they were unmasked, she had to go to a court or go to the NSA or
not
others.
A court, not
I don't
a court.
Think
not
that's
a FISA
true.
Court?
She's the National Security Advisor. I don't know that she really had to jump through a bunch of hoops.
I thought
she's
I read that there would have to be paper to go, trails.
She has to take a step, and there is a paper trail.
Well, maybe we should play that during the entire
that
podcast.
That should be our theme song.
Here's my question, though. So, you know, there was the story earlier in the transition or in the administration where the Obama people had found this information, some information, and then they kind of spread it out to congressional committees and to others so that it couldn't be hidden by the Trump administration if it was incriminating. This that? I mean, is this... Is what she unmasked, is that the information that they then spread so that it couldn't be thwarted by the Trump people? I mean, that seems like logic to me.
Yeah, I get that.
And this, by the way, in no way vindicates what Trump tweeted a month ago, that Obama was wiretapping Trump Tower.
No, it does not.
This is nowhere near that. And, you know, if Susan Rice overstepped her bounds here and had things revealed that shouldn't have been revealed, you know, that's a problem. But it doesn't – it actually is not related to this other story.
It seems like we're back to where – Excuse me. That we can edit out.
Fair enough.
I can't. Go ahead.
Hold on. She's going to fix it. You haven't lost your thought yet, right? Just your voice. Here. He's going to take a sip.
I'm actually trying to formulate my thought.
Well, you want me to say something?
Please do.
Okay. It just seems to me, though, like we're talking about 1A and 1B, and mostly we've been talking about 1B here. 1A is in this sort of following of these foreigners in the United States, we happen to catch them communicating with Trump administration people. That's the big topic. So Rice or Donald Trump's allegation against Barack Obama, those are all kind of distractions. They're legitimate, but they aren't the main thing that we should be focusing on, or that at least the government should be focusing on. It's this investigation into whether or not there was some sort of collusion, who said what to whom with the Russians.
I mean, couldn't you write this story where it's absolutely proper? Just because someone is saying that she did wrong doesn't mean that she did. They surveilled. Mm-hmm. They saw these conversations. They said, hey, wait, there might be something here. Who is that guy or who is that woman? And then they found out. To me, I guess it depends on who's telling the story. But
that doesn't
seems,
bother you so much.
That if seems perfectly. That's what they're supposed to
if
do.
If you know, U.S. individual A is saying, "Don't worry. As soon as the president comes into office, don't put any sanctions on us right now because we're going to lift the sanctions on you, or we'll deal with you about these once President Trump is sworn in," which is what they said they didn't do. And Susan Rice sees this and says, well, who is this individual? Who is this person? How close to the president is this person to be saying this? Why has this person's phone call been intercepted with the Soviet? You know, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal if she was using it in a political way. Again, you are supposed to unmask if there is a security threat, and maybe she thought there was. I also think she's lying about all of this. Like she acted in an interview a week ago that she didn't even know what unmasking was. And in fact, there are records now of all the times she requested it. And it also might not be wrong for transition team members to be speaking to foreign governments. I'm sure they were on the phone with all kinds of foreign governments as the transition was happening and after Trump won, right?
No, it's not wrong for them. It's wrong for them to be conducting diplomacy.
It's wrong for them to be trading. Listen, if you don't deport the diplomats, then don't worry. We'll take care of that when we get into office, right?
Well, there was... I don't know. I guess.
Hey, Dimitri, don't say anything about those meetings in the Seychelles Islands or something like that, right? I mean, that's something. Then you want to know who's saying that.
Yeah, and there was a case under the Obama administration when the Iran nuclear deal was being worked out, and Americans ended up getting spied upon because they were intercepted in conversations talking to Israelis about this deal. And there was something I think the Obama administration eventually had to apologize for. So is there a smoking gun? Back to your original question. I don't know, but I do think the hearings kind of help. Even the Benghazi hearings, as exhausting as they were, they helped kind of set up a timeline.
And interesting, this will bring Trey Gowdy and Susan Rice back together, right? Mm-hmm. Which was so much of the Benghazi hearings.
Yeah, and I would like to see her testify under oath. I'd like to hear her tell the story. I'm not, you know, I would like to hear more before I say that she's done something wrong.
Okay, but it still seems to me like we're falling prey to what Donald Trump is trying to do, and that is spend a lot of national time and focus on something that is tangential to the main thing here. Who was talking to the Russians? What was being said? Was there some sort of collusion?
But there's no evidence of that yet either, though. Not the collusion. You know, the FBI is investigating.
There may be. We just haven't heard it. We haven't heard those tapes. We don't know what was said by whom to whom,
no,
right?
No, but I think Obama's outgoing top security advisor has said on the record there is no evidence that there was collusion.
We do have hinkiness.
you did not say that.
Your Honor, I would like to present the
hinky
evidence.
What a shame it will be, though.
I'll allow it.
No, but we do have, thank you, Your Honor, if I may continue then. We do have Michael Flynn having these meetings, which may or may not have been okay, and then lying to the Vice
Pence,
President
mm-hmm,
and others
getting fired
about
it. For
it. We mm-hmm. do have Michael Flynn not claiming all of the money he was making or had made from the Russians, and then claiming that his resignation
that's
got in the way
stuff,
of it.
Steve, whatever. That is
so?
Hinkiness.
You think that's,
and
that's
Paul
hinkiness.
Manafort. No, I'm
that's,
not.
That's hink.
I wouldn't say there's a nothing burger here. I'm going to steal from Eli. Like, there's a something burger probably with both of these stories, with Rice's involvement and with the way the Russians influenced the election. Not colluded, but, you know.
Influence.
Mm,
well, but
yeah.
that and you do agree with me, though, Christian, right? That is really what our attention should be. That going forward, we want to preserve the integrity of the elections. So if anything, let's figure out what happened with respect to that, right?
Right. Yes. How did the Trump campaign seem to know what WikiLeaks was going to release before they released it?
And how is it that Donna Brazile knew the answers and gave them to Hillary Clinton?
You know, what a shame it'll be if history looks back on this period of time and reports that we found nothing, that there was no smoking gun, that this was all just flapping our jaws and had nothing to it.
Hey, that's our jobs, right? Hey, but to get to your question about whether Trump has successfully diverted attention, yeah, he's able to throw shiny objects off the path, but the path is still there, and these hearings are going to be held, and you're going to have Flynn probably testifying, you're going to have Susan Rice testifying. We're going to find out a lot more, and no matter how many things Donald Trump wants to say, I don't think he's going to be able to derail the investigation or its ultimate conclusion.
Leslie Stahl's on my show this week, and I was just looking back on some of the things she's written. She's written a book on grandmothers and the business of grandmother.
Right.
But she did the post-election Trump family interview. Right? Remember that? I was going back over it, and she asked him about Twitter, and he said, "Oh no, I don't think I'll use Twitter. If I do, it'll be very sparingly." Well, that didn't turn out.
I'm looking forward to some supremely awkward moments between Donald Trump and the Chinese. Don't you just because? Can you imagine two more different people dispositions? I'm just predicting, and by the time you're listening to this podcast, you'll probably know if I was right or wrong, but I want
something
to be on the record.
Something weird will happen,
yes,
right?
Yes. There's going to be a look. There's going to be that awkward handshake. He's going to be moving papers around on the table.
He's going to
do
present
something
him with
really
a bill.
Offensive to Chinese culture. Yeah.
That's right.
A buddy of mine sent me a text this morning and said, "Did you know that Trump gave Angela Merkel a bill?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, apparently he did."
For what?
When she came into the White House, you guys saw this reporting,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
that he
NATO.
Presented her with a mock-up bill of what Germany should have been paying for NATO.
Oh, I thought for her room at Mar-a-Lago
no.
or something. Like that.
No, right.
And do we care that Donald Trump said that the gassing in Syria is a result of Barack Obama's failed policies and they crossed the red line. He didn't do anything about it. Now they've crossed many, many lines. Donald Trump now is trying to weigh what our response should be. I wonder what you all think about that. Should the United States get more involved in what's going on in Syria? It's sort of the I don't know if it's peacekeepers of the world, but it's so ghastly what's happened. Somebody needs to step up and do something. By God, the United States should, right?
I don't want to see us go it alone. Adam Kinzinger, who represents Central Illinois, has been really out front on this and talking about airstrikes. I wouldn't be opposed to that. I don't think we can continue to sit by and watch this happen and just say, well, you know, it's not our job. It's too painful what is happening to this population. And yes, I do think that drawing the red line and then not adhering to it is a big reason for that. And you don't have to take my word for it. There's an opinion piece by, oh my God. Honestly, I think it's
do you
time
know how that
when
thing
I
works?
Start talking, it's like
yeah, no kidding. Yeah. He's actually got a little button he pushes.
What happens is
shut me up.
It's tied to Eric's pulse or heart rate. So once you start going,
exactly,
the Zen starts kicking in.
Exactly.
Starts
keep going, Kristen.
So there's right wing talking points.
I know. But that's why the music is kind of Zen.
It's
it kind of chills
right?
me
calm,
out. I like
calm
it.
Down, Eric. Calm so down, Eric. There, should be done soon.
Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
There's a man named, I'm going to mess up his name, Kasim Eid, who's been interviewed. He was part of the 2013 gassing. I don't know if it was sarin gas or whatever in Syria. He managed to escape. He now lives in Washington, D.C. He has written op-eds about how the people of Syria have been waiting and waiting for America to come and help them. And when Obama drew the red line, they thought, well, finally, it's going to happen. And we didn't. And that did contribute to a growth of terrorist cells. I mean, this is a Syrian explaining this. So and he, now because he can speak English, he's been used to translate and visit some. But anyway, go read his opinion piece in the
Post. I think that's widely agreed upon that the drawing the red line and then not acting on it was a mistake and led to, you know, further atrocities. But I also think that with your first breath as the president reacting to another gas attack to blame your predecessor is just
typical.
It's typical and
Churlish.
It's also despicable. I mean,
it's tacky, super tacky.
It's wrong to do. It's not what a leader does.
I would agree with you on that.
Couple of points. One is that back several years ago, Trump was tweeting almost nonstop about Syria for a while, saying that we should stay out of Syria. It's not our business. And Obama should keep people out of Syria. He was relentless about that. The other thing is that when Obama drew this red line, which was obviously a mistake to draw that red line, when Assad crossed the line, he then went to Congress and said, okay, now what do you want to give me authorization to go in there? And Congress said no. Congress was like, no, we're not going to okay that. I mean, it was an abdication. It was a punt on Obama's part. But Congress also punted. Congress didn't want anything to do with okaying military intervention. It's a really difficult situation.
Congress wasn't in session when that happened.
No, they did. But they refused to vote to
They didn't come back from session to
it was
do
all
anything.
Bad. It was a mistake.
The yeah, but I don't know if this matters. I wonder what the American people think. I wonder if the people listening to this think, yeah, we need to commit our troops or our planes and escalate it because we're outraged.
Well, Trump said his mind has changed about Syria, and he says he's drawn red lines and many – he said something like,
he's drawn a lot of lines.
He's crossed many lines. What's he going to do about it? What does the public want to do about it?
That's what I'm asking.
This is one of those situations where we realize it's like healthcare is complicated, tax overhauls are complicated – and the Middle East is extremely
well. That's it. So I get your criticism of Obama. He screwed it up. Now, what are you going to do about
it? Exactly.
We haven't heard that yet.
No, we haven't from him. And it's one of those things where you move one direction, and you know people say, well, should we just bomb Assad's air force? That sets off a whole different chain of events here. You've got Trump has been trying to cozy up to Putin. Now he's trying to distance himself. Was it Tillerson about 3 or 4 days ago said Syria? It's Syrian people's problem. Let them handle it.
Did you guys watch the videos
of the victims?
The gas attack.
Secretary of State. Mm-hmm.
I saw the still photos of it. I mean, the ambassador held him up before the UN. Why do you ask?
It might move you. I watched a lot of the videos right after this happened. I happened to see something. I went on Twitter. There were people on the ground videotaping these people literally suffocating to death. Children.
Shaking, right?
I mean, shaking, foaming at the mouth. I mean, it was just, it's so disturbing and such a horrible way to die that I think that has impacted my thinking of like we have to do something.
But
five or six, they threw all these babies into a truck and they were trying to rush them to the Turkish border and they were dying in the truck and it's on video and it's horrendous.
Hard to not see.
But here's my question then, Kristen. I agree with that, and we were moved by images of refugees as well. You know, a year ago, the little boy on the beach, the bodies and things like that. There was great public sentiment, and the eventual reaction to that was we cut off bringing in Syrian refugees. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Those horrific images had a public impact briefly, but then we were talked out of it and shut down the other way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how long lasting the impact of this will be.
I still have the same questions. Why can't Turkey do more? Why can't Saudi Arabia do more? Why can't some of the more geographically close countries do more to help these people? It's just, it's hard.
Well, this is a kind of incident that does coalesce international opinion, right? I mean, what you need in a situation like this, the United States can't. I mean, we have, it's a risk going in there alone, being the one who comes in and says, okay, we're going to bomb the crap out of you. We're going to send our ground troops in. But if you have an international coalition of countries that are not necessarily, you know, hostile to one, you know, faith or anything like that, where you have this sense that the world is outraged by this, the world is going to put a stop to it. Maybe you partition Syria. Maybe you just go in there and you run through Damascus and you grab Assad and drag him out like Mussolini and through the streets. I don't know.
You've got Russia.
Pardon?
You've got Russia to deal with if you do that.
Yeah, but you know, Russia may be galvanized by this too. I mean, this may be a bridge too far for
Putin. They don't sound galvanized. I mean, they've come out with a statement saying they think this is not accurately being reported. They're denying any culpability, and they're saying that it's probably not even Assad.
It's just, UN investigators have caught Assad, I think, at least three times now using chemical weapons. Who else has the military force to bomb in this way? They were probably Russian friggin' planes.
The witnesses say they were Russian-made.
So we've had volunteer efforts, and they bombed the volunteer envoys. I mean,
this is the kind of thing that we've all been talking about for the last 70 some days, is what's going to happen when Donald Trump is really tested.
Has to make a difficult decision, right?
There hasn't been, until now, there's been these North Korean missile tests that haven't gone all that well for them. But this is a real test of his leadership and his presidency. And his first statement was not encouraging. His remarks in the Rose Garden yesterday were more on point, but still really vague. And so it's,
well, he only articulated how ghastly it was in his own way, but he didn't say what we should do next. And
right.
To be honest with you, I don't know that any of the four of us at this table have a spot-on recommendation for him either. That it's our job,
and
I'm actually
a little encouraged that he didn't come right out and say, this is what we're going to do right now. This is something you really need to think through.
He's not going to telegraph it. That's part. Remember when he was running, as a candidate, he would never telegraph what he's doing. I expect
that's
to wake up one of
that's
these.
That's a ploy, though.
Well, but also, I do think there's some truth to, you can't, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a special op underway to try to take out Assad right now.
Boy, I hope so.
That wouldn't surprise me.
We are done with this week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. We need recommendations from many of you all. Steve, anything you want to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, this is kind of a weird one, but Girls on HBO. I don't know if you guys watched that over the years.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
Lena
Dunham. Yeah.
And I've kind of stayed with it through all of it.
It's so hard to watch, and it is so awesome to watch.
A couple of really lean seasons, I think, and this is the last one, and I've been watching it, and it's really back. I mean, it's good, and it's interesting to me that it's Girls, and it's about these four self-absorbed young professionals in New York City. But if you watch it with a different lens, it's the most fascinating characters are three or four men who are in it. Adam Driver is one of the actors, and so I really like it. I don't know if people could pick up on it now and catch up, but it looks like it's really finishing in a strong way. Girls on HBO.
How about you, Mr. Zorn?
Well, I'm going to recommend S-Town, this podcast that everyone's talking about. It was from the folks who did Serial, and This American Life Serial, and it's a 7-part series. And all I'll say about it is this reporter went down to Alabama to interview this autodidact clock repairer and kind of kook. And he begins pulling on some really interesting threads, and the 7-episode arc takes a bunch of different turns. A lot of people are talking about it. It's the number one podcast in the country right now. I think we're number 3 or 4. So
we're number 2, right?
I'm not sure. But
I did go to an event. I told Eric about this. I spoke to a group of PR professionals. And the person who found me from Mincing Rascals. And he talked about it in front of this crowded room of people. Peter Scosi, thank you. So we have some fans out there. You might have picked up a couple listeners.
Well, here's my recommendation. It's a book about baseball. There's a lot. They all come out about now, right? The latest one is by a philosopher. It's called Fail Better, Why Baseball Matters. Even the best baseball players, it's an exercise in failure constantly.
Right, sure. Right.
So he derives a bunch of sort of messages and meanings and has interesting analyses and statistics about baseball. It's a philosophy baseball book called Fail Better. And that's my recommendation this week.
We didn't get Kristen's recommendation.
Well, I thought that was because she didn't.
Yeah, okay.
I thought that was because you didn't have one, and I was rescuing you from that. But you do have one.
Well, I was just going to recommend a drink.
Pardon me, but we buried the lead. So what is it?
I went on a distillery tour It was very cool. So they make bourbon and whiskeys and all different kinds of whiskey. So now I'm drinking whiskey grapefruit. It's equal parts whiskey, grapefruit juice, a little simple syrup, and you stick a basil leaf in it. It's
nice,
delicious.
Nice. I love the sound of that.
It's your summer cocktail right there.
What was the distillery, by the way?
It's called Quincy Street. It's in Riverside. Very cool place.
Chicago one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you traveled or something.
No,
like
and then
that.
You do a little tasting afterwards.
Isn't that fun?
It is fun.
Kids?
Yep, they sat up at the bar with me. Colin really preferred the rye whiskey. So,
as we sit, the Senate has just triggered its nuclear option. So, yeah.
Okay.
When this comes out, we'll have a new Supreme Court justice, too. We don't have time for that.
We'll do that next week. This is the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, Steve Bertrand. I'm John Williams. Remember, you can hear portions of this. The very best parts broadcast Saturday mornings at 11.
My alarm's not going to be in there.
I edit a lot of Eric stuff.
Our 3 minutes are up.
Ben Cortez is our engineer. Thank you, Ben. This is produced by LF Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.